Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I will be interviewing Ronnie Davis. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available each week on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Ronnie, I've watched so many more movies on my downtime. I've always enjoyed movies, you know, watching movies. But since this quarantine, I found myself watching much more movies because just the lack of interaction with, you know, everyone as I would have prior to the pandemic beginning. How have things been going for you?
Since the pandemic hit? Wow, great question. So actually, for me, nothing really has changed a whole lot in my day-to-day life since the pandemic. I lead a pretty quiet life anyway. And, you know, so I haven't really changed a whole lot in terms of my day-to-day life. I haven't really been watching more movies or anything, more so than usual. I'll throw movies on sometimes if my brain feels extra tired and I just need to decompress or something. But I've joked with friends that, you know, I feel like I spent the last 5 years preparing for something like this pandemic to hit, because there were so many things about the work that I've done in my own life and, you know, for myself in the past few years that have really helped me get through the pandemic without feeling like I really needed to change a whole lot. You know, like I really got good in the last several years at just being able to be alone with myself and not always needing like I needed to, or feeling like I needed to be entertained by other people or to have interaction with other people or to be entertained by anything outside of just me, right? So even just things like sitting quietly and meditating and different things like that, I spent a lot of time doing those sorts of things. So I really haven't changed a whole lot, you know, in terms of what I do. I just spend every day connecting with myself and how I feel moment to moment, depending on what's going on around me, you know, like, for example, when a pandemic hits. In the beginning, when the pandemic hits, you know, there was a little bit of extra fear and stuff going on. So I just stayed connected with myself through all of that and what I was feeling and what I needed to manage that fear and to get through that stuff. And, you know, maybe sometimes it was a new movie or something or a meditation or just quiet time with myself, different things like that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're pandemic ready.
I was ready. The only thing I wasn't ready was I was not stocked up on loads of toilet paper. I did not have my storm shelter full of toilet paper. I'll have to change that next time.
No, I didn't even think of it until I rarely watched the news, but I happened to see a news clipping of, you know, shelves being bare. And I'm like, I wonder why people are buying toilet paper and paper towels. I didn't even think of that's not something I even thought about.
Right? It was crazy. And here, like, I live in a pretty rural area here in Canada. And it hadn't, like, COVID hadn't even actually hit here yet. And the shelves were still starting to sell out. It was crazy. I'm like, it's not even here yet, guys. What are you doing? Like,
people are, you know, quick to panic, you know, to meet it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're so programmed with fear, right? We're so programmed to be scared. Just buy all the toilet paper.
Wow, that's crazy. But yeah, I mean, that was something else. So, you've had your own journey, you know, of, you know, fear, I'm sure, and being uneasy with your just body image and weight and so forth. What was that journey like for you?
So, yeah, I mean, we talked before, the last time we talked, I shared a little of that. But yeah, I mean, fear in and of itself, aside from even the body image struggles and the weight struggles and stuff like that, fear in and of itself has been huge for me my entire life. In fact, yesterday on social media, I just posted a whole thing about how scared I was about something I was working on. Fear has been incredibly pervasive through my entire life. And no more so did that reflect in my earlier years than through my body, my weight, and the food that I was eating. So, you know, I grew up in the same society that most of us do, believing that or being conditioned to believe that, you know, weight gain is the worst thing that can possibly happen to a person, especially if you're a woman, you know, that we've got to look a certain way. We've got to portray a certain image, you know, and we've got to eat certain things if we want to be good and healthy and all of this stuff. So yeah, fear around having a perfect body, fear around gaining weight, fear around losing weight, fear around the things that I was eating, you know, causing weight gain or contributing to poor health or just, you know, being seen as, you know, somehow less than just because of the way that I ate. Because, you know, and like I've talked about before, I was bulimic for a number of years as well. So, you know, there's a whole lot of fear in around that as well. And so, yeah, fear around all of that was just a huge part of my life for a very, very long time. And it was tough. It was very tough to break out of.
And when did you notice the fear, or when were you able to kind of pinpoint that it started, you know, at an early age?
Well, I don't think that I even realized, like, I think for me, fear really started in my life just in general when I was a little girl, when my father was alcoholic and he was scary when he was drinking. And so fear just got programmed into my body from a very early age. And so once it's programmed into you, you know, it's more likely to be triggered by all of these other things. And so I didn't really realize that it was there. And I didn't realize that it was, you know, I didn't realize that it was underlying all of the issues that I had with food and with my body and weight until some years later, probably my mid-30s. You know, I had become a personal trainer and a nutrition and wellness coach, and I was training for figure competitions and competing in those types of physique things. And I started having trouble with anxiety. So it sort of started with a little bit of depression that happened when I became bulimic as a result of all of the dieting and the training I was doing. Started with a little bit of depression there, and then it you know, anxiety started coming in at the same time, and then full-blown panic attacks started hitting. And again, I didn't realize that those things were happening as a result of, you know, childhood traumas or as a result of the fear that I was carrying around what my body looked like and what foods I was putting in my body, you know, or what food choices I was making for myself. I really didn't know that until probably closer to my late 30s. By the time I hit my late 30s, I was kind of at the point where, okay, I'm not living like this anymore. Like, we got to stop this. We got to figure out how to get this stuff under control and make some changes here, Ronnie, because this is not working. And once I did that, I started recognizing, and I really started working on mindfulness and meditation and personal growth and all those things that sort of have become a bit cliche in our world, but they really changed everything for me. And when I started digging into some of that stuff and digging into some of the reasons why I was having anxiety issues in the first place, and, you know, the reasons why I was struggling so much with my body and food and all the fear around that, that's when everything really started changing. So I spent probably, you know, the first major part of my life not even recognizing that fear was this issue that was underlying everything. Now I'm at least aware of it when it does happen and know where it's coming from and why it's there, which is huge. And I know how to manage it. Mm-hmm.
Did any of your friends or family say anything to you about your weight once it, you know, got to a certain place?
No, and it's interesting because it's so funny. Like, I was lucky in that nobody ever said anything to me directly. Like, a lot of people have parents or spouses or other people in their lives that are very critical of their weight personally. So for me, nobody was critical of my weight towards me. I mean, I don't know what they said behind my back, but to me, they didn't. But they always said it about themselves or about other people. So like my mom, for example, and I feel bad, I always throw her under the bus. She's the most wonderful lady, but she just, you know, taught what she learned growing up. So she was, you know, conditioned in the same way as I was, but she'd always comment about like other people's weight. For example, like, oh, I saw so-and-so the other day and, oh, you know, I haven't seen her in a while and she gained so much weight. It's so sad. She really let herself go. And so when you hear people say things like that, and everybody does that, right? Like, have you ever noticed, like, everybody does that in our culture? Everybody does it. And so when you hear that kind of thing all the time, you start to think, geez, what's she saying about me? Right?
Yeah.
Like, if she's thinking this way, but it sends these, you know, underlying messages that it's so bad, it's so sad when we gain weight, or she'd say something about herself. So she'd stand in the mirror, and my mother has always had a beautiful body. Like, she's a beautiful woman, perfect body. I've always idolized her body and thought, that's how I want to look. And she'd stand in the mirror and she'd be sucking in her stomach and, oh, I look so fat in this today. And you think to yourself, well, Christ, if she thinks she's fat, what she must think of me, right? So you don't even need people to pick on you about your weight. It's literally in the fabric of our society to start feeling almost even rejection for yourself if you put on an ounce. Right? When those are the messages you get. Even TV shows always make fun of the person that's bigger. Mm. Right? Like, so there's all these subtle little ways our world has programmed us that fat is bad. And I took them all in. And I internalized all of them, like most of us do.
Yeah. It sounds like the weight is not necessarily the problem, but a symptom of the psychological state that we're in.
100%. You said it perfectly. The weight has never, ever been the problem. And one of the biggest problems in our society, and the reason why people struggle with weight so much, is that we are treating weight like the problem. And we're trying to treat the problem. We're trying to just sort of band-aid this thing that we think is the problem, when the reality is the weight is the symptom. And as long as you're just trying to band-aid the symptom, which is what you do every time you try to diet or change your body in any kind of way, all you're really doing is trying to band-aid the symptom, right? So all you're doing, you're just trying to band-aid the symptom. That's what we're all doing. And we're not dealing with the underlying reasons why we struggle with our weight, right? The underlying thoughts, beliefs and behaviors that contribute to weight, or why we're struggling with our body image. Because a lot of people that I've worked with over the years don't even struggle with weight. Like, they'll be the teeniest, tiniest little women and still hate what they see when they look in the mirror. And I just always think, if you're never happy with your body, no matter what it looks like, and you're always critical of yourself because of it or anything else, how can you think that it's ever been about your body? It's not about your body. It's not about the weight. It's about the stuff going on that's making you feel like that, right? Mm-hmm. And the stuff going on that's causing you to eat in ways that make you gain weight or make you feel bad about yourself and your body in the first place.
Yeah. And that leads us into the next question. What are some of the biggest reasons people struggle to keep their weight loss?
So the single biggest reason is basically what we just said, because they're trying to treat the symptom and not the underlying cause. So for example, why'd you gain weight in the first place? So for me, I gained weight because I thought the reason we tell ourselves is always never the real reason. I thought it was because I just love food. I was just a pig, couldn't control myself, couldn't stop eating all the time. That was it. I just love food. The reality was, which again, I didn't realize until I started doing the digging required to fix it. The reality was I struggled with food because I could not manage my emotions in any way, shape or form without food. I fed everything, everything. And that's really, really common, because most of us are never taught what to do with our emotions, right? Like, think about how much time anybody spent teaching you as you were growing up what to do with your emotions.
Sure.
They don't teach us what to do with them. All they teach us is, don't feel that way. Shush. It's okay. Don't cry. Don't feel that way. and here's some ice cream to make it feel better. Mm-hmm. Right? So our brain gets conditioned into these patterns of behaviors around food. So I was eating when I wasn't hungry because I was using food to feed all of these emotions without even realizing it, right? Like that autopilot habit of just reaching for the food becomes wired into your brain. And you don't even know you're doing it. You don't even know that the reason you're reaching for those five cookies is because you just looked in the mirror and saw a wrinkle and criticized yourself for it and feel bad about yourself now. Right? You don't even realize because it's just patterns of behavior that we develop around food. So that's one of the biggest reasons, because what typically happens is people who want to lose weight, what are the first things they do? Diet and exercise.
Yes.
Neither one does anything about why we put the weight on in the first place. Does nothing. All it does is try to force you to make some external changes for a period of time, right? It's not doing anything about the fact that, you know, you're probably eating to soothe all of your emotions and getting, you know, however many extra calories every day that your body doesn't actually need. Another reason is because we're so programmed to believe that in order to be healthy or skinny or feel like we're good enough, we're worthy, that we have to eat a certain way. All of the attempts that we make to try to eat that certain way contribute to things like binging or even just overeating and feeling out of control around food. I have never met a single adult human who didn't have some concept about what good foods were and what bad foods were. Right? And we're so programmed to believe that these are the good foods and these are the bad foods. And if they're the bad foods, you really should never have them because they're bad. So what's the first thing you do when you try to diet or lose weight or eat healthy or whatever? You start trying to cut out all the bad foods. Right? It's the first thing you do. They're bad. Got to stop doing them. Got to stop eating them. Well, what's the first thing that happens as soon as you start trying to cut out all the bad foods? You're craving them. You start becoming consumed with thoughts of the foods that you can't have anymore or that you think are bad and you're not supposed to be eating. It's one of the biggest reasons why most of our population talks all the time about not being able to stop eating the chocolate or whatever. It's because we're trying to make ourselves not eat it. Because food restriction of any kind activates the millennia-old survival center in our brain that says, we're going to starve. You need that food. Like from an evolutionary standpoint, humans are not designed to restrict food in those ways. So the first thing that happens when you start trying to restrict them is you start craving them more. And so willpower and discipline and all those diet industry made up words, they can work for a little while if they're strong enough to help you avoid those things. But what ultimately happens for most people is they just keep caving. Because their brain is sending this signal, oh, we're going to starve. We got to eat that. And the more you try to ignore it, the louder it gets. And another reason is we think, like, I could go on. I mean, the reasons that we struggle with weight, I could go on half the day. We self-punish with food. Every time we cave, every time we tell ourselves there's something wrong with us, every time we struggle with self-doubt, every time we decide the scale goes up a half a pound, we feel bad about ourselves. And we treat ourselves the way we believe we deserve to be treated. So what happens? We use food to self-punish. Oh, well, I already feel like crap anyway, so I may as well just eat the rest of it. Oh, well, I was already bad today, so I may as well just eat the rest of it. Right? We self-punish. There are so many different reasons behind why we eat the way we eat that are literally conditioned into who we are. That's why the weight is the symptom. People are struggling because they're not addressing the causes, which I guess is a long answer for some of the biggest reasons why.
Yeah, when you were talking about, you know, the more people try to refrain from something, that thing that they're trying to refrain from becomes the dominant thought in their minds. Yep. So we always move towards the most dominant thoughts in our minds.
Yeah.
So it made me think of this saying I had, a man can't turn from something until he turns to something. So the power in our lives is not in stopping, but in the starting. So if I want to change my life, change my eating habits, change my state of mind, I must be consumed with what I want instead of being consumed with what I don't want, because I'm going to move in whatever direction that's most dominant.
That is such a good point. And also another reason why we struggle so much with it. So a lot of people who have lived this cycle for so long, they tell themselves all day, I can't have it, I can't have it, I can't have it. And it just makes them want it more. And then every time they cave, it reinforces this story that I'll never have it because, like, I'll never get where I want to be because I can't stop eating it. So all they keep doing is moving in the direction of these beliefs and these thoughts and these patterns that they just keep repeating. You can't ever change anything as long as you keep repeating the same crap you've been doing. You're moving towards what you're doing, right? So in the work that I do with my clients now is the first thing I tell them, eat whatever you want. And exactly like you said, move towards what you want. Eat whatever you want, whenever you want, right? Focus on joy with food and not trying to restrict anything, because that allows you to stop feeling that restriction. And for some people, that alone is enough to change the way they relate to food. Just allowing yourself to eat whatever you want. And the way that you can use that, like a lot of people will say, yeah, but when I do that, you know, that's what got me into this mess. No, like eating what you actually wanted to eat didn't get you into this mess, as people call it. Eating the way your brain has conditioned you to eat gets us into that mess. It's all just conditioning in our brain. If we switch it and we start paying attention to what our bodies want, right? What do I need in this moment? What do I want in this moment that's going to make me feel my best, right? Like, how do I feel? How do I want to feel? And what's going to make me feel that way? What's going to make me feel the best? What's going to nourish my emotions in the ways that I need to nourish my emotions, right? Like, what do I want? And what can I do to get there, right? I just want joy with food. So what can I have that I'm just going to enjoy? And what can I have that's going to make me feel good? Because I just want to feel good when I'm done eating. So what can I have that I'm going to really enjoy that's going to help me feel better? It changes everything. Because the other thing that typically happens is everybody always says, oh, I can't stop eating because I love food too much. I just love eating. But the reality is, for most people who get stuck in those overeating cycles or patterns of behavior around food that make them feel like crap when they're done eating or eat in ways that cause weight gain, what typically happens is after the first couple of bites of something, you're not even enjoying it anymore. Right? Like whatever you're about to eat, whatever that quote bad thing is that you're about to eat, it's really only after the first, first bites that you enjoy. Everything after that, you may start to notice you're getting a little bit bloaty. You're starting to get a little bit full. You know, maybe your thoughts are starting to go, oh, you got to stop eating this now. No, but I can't. No, but you really should. Oh, but I can't. I just want to keep it. Right. So it just ends up being this whole big thing around all of these thoughts about what you're doing with the food. And you start noticing you're feeling crappy from it. And it's not fun anymore. But if you treat it this way, and let me just have what I enjoy until it's not fun anymore, until I don't enjoy it anymore. And let me have what I enjoy anytime I want it. It takes the cravings away from it. All those feelings of being out of control around food can stop when we stop feeling like we're never going to get it again. If we know that we can have it anytime we want it, it's like, well, it's there, but whatever, you know, I don't even care about it anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting fact. Just like now I have so many different movie subscriptions, right? We have our Netflix, we have our Hulu, we have our Amazon Prime. You know, we have access to all these different things because it doesn't cost very much. But it does add up over time. But we have access to all of this stuff. But yet, I rarely I watch a lot of movies, but I don't watch as much movies as I could possibly watch. Yeah. You know, because I have so much access to it that I don't normally just automatically, that's not the first thing I automatically reach for.
Yeah. And imagine, but imagine though, if all of a sudden they were all gone.
Yes.
And you could never watch another movie again for as long as you live. Wouldn't that be all you think about? The movie? I gotta watch this movie. Oh my God, I gotta. Wouldn't that be right? Wouldn't that be all you think about? How much you wanna watch the movie? Now, take that and apply it to the way that we eat. And remember that, you know, watching a movie isn't necessarily a matter of life or death for humans. Eating food is a matter of life or death for humans. So there's all of that reactionary and biological survival instinct built into food. So imagine if there's all that extra biological instinct to survive. I mean, humans have eaten other humans when hungry enough. Like, do not underestimate our survival mechanism when it comes to food. So apply that same, that exact same logic to food, and then add in that survival instinct that humans have for food. And it is easy to see why people struggle with those feelings of being out of control so much.
Yeah, definitely.
It's all you're going to think about, just like the movies, exactly like you said, it would be all you'd think about. But when you're allowed to have it whenever you want, like if you've ever noticed the difference between, and maybe you haven't, I noticed this because I've done food and weight for so many years, but if you ever noticed the difference between people who struggle with weight and food and the people who don't, the people who struggle the most with their weight and food and all of this stuff are the people who have the most rules attached to what they're allowed to eat. They're the people who are trying the hardest to control their intake, what they're eating. The people who don't struggle with weight and food typically just eat what they want. They eat when they're hungry, right? Whatever they want to eat when they're hungry, and they stop when they're full. It's not a big deal. But the people who struggle the most are the ones that the most rules you have around what you think you should be eating and what you're not allowed to eat are the people who feel the most out of control around food typically.
Sure.
For that reason. Yeah.
Sure. So what was the process like for you learning how to manage your emotions, and then it was a correlation to you dealing with your food relationship?
So it started kind of, I guess it sort of went a little backwards for me, maybe. At some point I recognized, I think it was probably after my last competition when I won my last competition, and I still hated myself. I was still binging. Like, you know, I got there, I won this thing that I had wanted, and I like, all of my problems are still here. So at that point I couldn't train anymore because I got injured, and then everything really hit. So, you know, because at that point the training was one of my coping strategies along with eating. So I hit bottom, I guess you could say. It's again, kind of cliche, but I just got to the point where I recognized, okay, all of this obsessing over what I'm supposed to be eating and what I'm not supposed to be eating is not working. All of this obsession that I have over perfecting my body is not working, right? Like, I got there. I was the best on stage. I did it. It's perfect. I still hate it. Like, this stuff that I'm trying to do to make myself happier and healthier is not working. So if it's not working, what do I need to do instead? I just wanted to be happy. I just wanted to, the war in my head that was nonstop, I just wanted that to go away. I just wanted to feel peace and kind of start liking myself a little, maybe. Right. So I had to get busy understanding what was causing it all. And I started reading. The first book that I read was Louise Hay's You Can Heal Your Life. And again, probably a cliche book because it's been around for so long. But I mean, this book, as I'm reading this book, I'm like, holy crap, I hate myself. Like, that's basically where this is all coming from. I don't love myself. And the more I read, the more I was like, I don't even like myself. I hate myself. And as soon as I recognized that, I was like, oh, it makes so much sense how I could treat my body this way now. Right? Like, no wonder I'm saying all these things to myself. And no wonder I'm beating the hell out of my body and eating so much that I'm scared I'm going to die in my sleep every day. I'm literally trying to destroy myself because I don't like myself. That was huge. Like, recognizing that for me was huge. And then getting busy working on figuring out how to change it was the next step. So I started realizing, okay, so why don't I like myself? Right? Like I'm a very simple person. I'm just like, okay, if this is the problem, so why am I here? Why don't I like myself? Okay, so I don't like myself because of this and this and this. And then I recognize these are mostly all just stories I'm telling myself about stupid shit that happened to me in my past. Right? That's why I don't like myself. And I don't like myself because of all this stuff I'm telling myself about how terrible I am. So I started approaching my days from the place of, okay, what can I focus on that's good in my life that's going to make me feel better, right? Because I hated everything about life too. So what can I focus on about life that's going to make me feel better? And what are the ways in which I'm contributing to the reasons why I hate myself? And how can I change them? So basically, I just started going, okay, what's making me feel worse? What's making me feel better? And how can I do more of the things that are making me feel better? And from there, I really just started getting into, you know, mindfulness and meditation and questioning my thoughts. And I don't know if I told this story before on your last one, but one morning I was eating breakfast and I was making myself toast. And I was sort of, I'd sort of started this process of awakening and whatever. And so I'm making myself toast one morning. And I remember I was hearing, you know, I'm buttering my toast and I'm thinking to myself, hey, you idiot, like, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be having toast. You're supposed to be having oats and an egg and 6 blueberries. That's what you're supposed to be having. You know, you trained hard yesterday. This isn't going to build a new muscle. You're having bread and it's white bread. It's so bad. You're going to be so, you know, and I start hearing all these thoughts that we, you know, typically have around food. And then all of a sudden it was like this, you know, kind of white knight came in on a white horse in my head and said, just sort of said, stop, wait, like it's toast. Like normal people have toast for breakfast sometimes. And when I was beating on myself for having the toast for breakfast, you know, at the same time, I was also planning all the stuff I was going to binge on for the rest of the day. And then when this little white knight voice came in and said, you know, it's just toast, like normal people, like, why are you a bad person for wanting toast for breakfast? Like normal people do that sometimes, like it's not a big deal. I kind of went, oh, yeah, I'm going to enjoy my toast, damn it. And so I did. And then I didn't binge the rest of the day. And so there were, like, as I was going through this process of just sort of starting to understand myself and my patterns, I started questioning things in that way, right? I started questioning some of these old beliefs. Another morning, I remember I was in the mirror and I, you know, I spent a long time really busting my ass to build a perfect body, and in particular to build a perfect ass. I was obsessed with having this perfect ass. I don't know why I thought that was the be all and end all to happiness in life, but anyway, I spent a long time working on it. And I remember I was in the mirror one day and, you know, it had been a while since I had been training that hard and my body was starting to revert back. And so I'm in the mirror and I'm getting dressed and I happen to notice my ass in the mirror and I went, oh, that's getting a little flatter than it was. Oh, there's a little cellulite coming back on there. And then I went, oh, well, I mean, you're 45. What are you going to do? And I was like, holy crap. Yeah. Who cares? So it was this process of just kind of unlearning all of the crap and the conditioning and figuring out where did it all come from and just changing it. And slowly over time, you know, everything just sort of started to shift. And once everything sort of started to shift around the binge eating and that kind of thing, then I started working on the emotional eating and learning to manage emotions and that sort of thing. So that sort of came a little bit later for me. And that was, I think, even probably the longest and the hardest part of it. Because emotions are scary. They really are. When you've had a history of not feeling them and doing everything you can to not feel them, it's scary to start trying to let yourself go there and to just let them be. But you know, that came too, just little by little with continued practice. And people often say, like, how did you keep going? Because this is the kind of work that you don't typically see progress from day to day, right? Like you don't wake up tomorrow morning seeing the scale go down with this kind of work in the same way that you do with, you know, other things. There's not that instant change that you can notice in terms of, you know, quantifiable numbers or anything, but I just kept going because I recognized that staying the way that I was simply wasn't an option. There just wasn't an option. I was going to kill myself with food if I stayed the way I was. So staying that way just wasn't an option. You know, I always think about that quote that says, you know, you can't change what you're willing to tolerate. So I had to just get to the point where I was unwilling to tolerate it. And then I just did what I needed to do every day to get there.
So it sounds like you got past the state of making excuses for yourself and you said, this is it.
Yeah. Like you really just got to get real. Okay. What's working here? What's not working? And of the stuff that's not working, why is it not working? Like, what are the bullshit stories I'm telling myself about why it's not working? I'm sorry. Can I say that on here?
Yes, you're okay. Okay,
sorry. Like, what are the stories that I'm telling myself? Like you said, the excuses, like, right? Like, what are the things that I'm telling myself about why I'm in this place? And I just had to get real about it all. And then, okay, what am I going to do to change it? Okay, let's get busy. Yeah.
So I know people, especially during this time of year, people make New Year's resolutions. what are some of the biggest issues or things that people struggle with keeping them?
Well, you know, in keeping them, a lot of it has to do with what I said before, right? They're setting these resolutions that are completely impractical based on where they are, right? So if you're in a binging emotional eater and you set a resolution to lose weight, you are not going to keep that for obvious reasons, right? Like, so one of the biggest reasons is they're not setting these resolutions in any basis of reality. They're not basing it on where they currently are. So you got to look at where you are, first of all, and start there. So based on where I am, what do I need to do to get where I want to be? Another reason that they struggle so much to keep them is that they expect that because the date on the calendar has changed, they're all of a sudden going to wake up a new person ready to do all of these things that they keep telling themselves they have to do. So typically, and this is particularly true in the case of, you know, the health and wellness and fitness resolutions and all of this and weight loss resolutions and all this crap. So what typically happens is they spend the entire month of December, might even have started in November or even Halloween, right? The whole end of the year, eating crap, not thinking about what they want or need in life or anything else. They're just putting off doing what they feel like they need to do to get through the holidays because, you know, they just want to enjoy, right? So they do nothing about any of it and then decide that they're going to have enough willpower and motivation on January 1st and everything's going to change. And what they start trying to do, so they go into it usually for very similar reasons, right? Most people go into these types of resolutions or any resolutions really, because they want to feel a certain way, right? Like pretty much any resolution or any goal that we set any time of year, we set that because of the way that we think it's going to make us feel when we get there. Right. So most of the time for people with health and wellness type resolutions, it's I want to feel better. Right. I want to feel good about myself. I want to feel better in my clothes. I just want to feel better because right now I feel tired all the time and I feel bloaty and gross and I feel right. So most of the time it's just I want to feel better. I want to feel better in my clothes. I want to feel better about myself. And so what do you do? Do you start changing, working on changing the thoughts, beliefs and behaviors that have gotten you where you are? No. Most people aren't doing that. What they're doing is they're trying to force themselves to follow all these things they think they're supposed to do, right? They jump on the fitness wagon in January. They get a gym membership. They start going to the gym. So they start trying to force themselves to do all of these things that they think they're supposed to do instead of addressing the reasons why they feel the way they feel in the first place. And then trying to do things to just help themselves feel the way they want to feel. So if you go into the new year and you want to feel better, in general, or about yourself, or in clothes, or whatever. You just want to be happy and healthy, right? Pretty much everybody could say, I just want to be happy and healthy. And then you started a gym that you hate, doing a gym routine that you hate. You start trying to follow this diet that you hate, that you're white knuckling, and it's making you miserable. All you really wanted was to feel better. And you're starting to try to force yourself to go against all of your past conditioning and follow all these things that are not making you happy to do. So I would ask you, why wouldn't people fall off faster? right? Like, it's not a question of why do people struggle, it's why wouldn't they? Of course they're struggling, because that's what they're all doing. If all you want to do is feel better, just start focusing moment to moment on why you're not feeling good in the first place, and then what you can do about it in this moment. Because here's the other thing, future you doesn't even exist yet. That future you that you just want to start feeling better shouldn't even exist yet. The only version of you that exists is the one right now. The only version of you who you have any control over is right now. So if you want to feel better, the single best thing you can do in life is to focus on the things that you can do for yourself right now. Instead of setting goals, hoping that maybe someday, if you do all of these things that you hate doing and you don't want to do and you've kept putting off doing, maybe someday after you do all that shit, you're going to feel better. Doesn't work. It's never worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's the, you have a podcast?
Yeah, I actually did. I started a podcast since we last talked.
Wow. Congratulations. Yeah, thank you. On that. What's the name of
it's
your
called
podcast?
It's All in Your Head. And it's where I teach you that the power to change your health, your habits, and your life are all in your head.
Wow. Is it, do people get to send questions
I've
in?
I've not done that yet, although that's a good idea. I probably should. You probably should. What I typically do is you know, I talk about different things that a current client might be struggling with, or I'll talk about things that I've seen other clients struggle with, or like, for example, this time of year, you know, I'll talk about goals and stuff like that. And some of the things that I've just shared with you about why we struggle with them, things like that. I've interviewed a few people on it before, not very often though, because I'm not great at it yet. One of my quote goals, I hate that word. One of my goals for this year is to get better at doing some interviews myself and have some people on. Maybe we'll have you on mine next this year.
Yeah, that would be fine with me. Yeah.
Although I don't know that I'm going to be as good an interviewer as you are. You certainly make it easy.
Well, thank you. You've given us a lot of good information, valuable information. I hope people will also check out your podcast, because you have a lot to offer in just your own journey. I mean, bodybuilder, just doing all these fabulous things that you've done in your life, but yet still having a limp, so to speak. So you were able to, you know, find your footing and do the inner work that just changed your life for the better. I know people have gained so much from your story and just your knowledge and insight that you've gained over the years.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been quite a ride.
Yes. So, What's your one to grow on for us? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave us with?
I think the one of the most is that our bodies are so much smarter than we give them credit for. We think that we have to follow everybody else's rules about what's best for our bodies, and we spend so much time trying to force ourselves to do that that we end up completely and totally disconnected from our bodies and being driven by this crap going on in our brains. And so I think that one of the most valuable pieces of information I can share is just start getting in tune with what your body is telling you. It's trying to communicate with you 24/7. It's telling you that thing that you're eating isn't making you feel good, right? It's telling you when you need what you need. It's telling you how you feel. It's communicating with you. It can be trusted to tell you what you want to eat and when you want to eat it and what's best for you. Because nobody knows what's best for your body than your own body. And here's the kicker of that. Nobody else on the planet is more invested than your well-being than your body. Nobody. And we all tune it out. We don't want to listen to it. Let me go find this, you know, nutrition guru to tell me what I'm supposed to be eating today, because my body doesn't know anything. No. That nutrition guru is not invested in your health and well-being. Nobody is. Your body is. And it can be trusted to tell you what it needs, even food-wise. You just got to learn to listen to it and get out of your head. So, you know, the answers are all in your head, but you kind of sometimes got to get out of your head and into your body to hear what's really going on.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.